This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
This is Powering Through the Pandemic on BFM 89.9.
One phrase that has come up a lot over the last few weeks is PPE, or personal protective equipment. Face masks are probably the most essential and most common piece of protective gear, and there's a shortage of proper medical masks because of the COVID-19 pandemic. Obviously, that's a major problem, and for the frontliners in direct contact with infected patients, that could potentially be a life and death issue. Luckily enough, a local community of 3D printers has come together to address the issue as much as they can. It's not an easy task, and it comes with a list of challenges and risks, but the group mobilized almost overnight to use their resources and start printing as much protective facial gear as they could. One of the main units working on this is Taylor's Mareka Makerspace. We got in touch with MakerLab's coordinator, Shirza Jin, to talk about their efforts and how they're making a difference during this ongoing pandemic. Jin, I want to start by asking you, when did you first realize that there was a shortage of face masks locally? Like, was it something that you predicted based on news coming from other countries and what they are going through? Or, you know, is this something that you prepared for in advance, or is it something that you learned about recently?
So for my side, it's actually, we actually saw that been happening in US, especially on the, there are people that starting making face shield, but not in the mass yet. We got the idea that, hey, we can do this by 3D printing. But the actual request actually come in on Saturday night. So what happened is, one, our CEO, Mareka side CEO, the Rashwin, actually got a call from his friend in HKL, hospital in HKL, and actually said that, hey, we are currently in need of this thing. Is there a way that sources or you can help make it or not? We need some, get some help for us. So then he put the question out, and then quickly by Sunday, we come out with the idea that, hey, we can do 3D printing, but 3D printing might be too slow. Is there a way that we can mass produce it? And so by Sunday night, we actually come out with the first design prototype thing, and we go back to the doctor and say that, hey, do you think this will work? Do you think this will good? Then back and forth a few times, then we realized that, okay, I think we can start with this. And then by Monday, we should start making it already.
The way you're explaining it sounds like it happened in like less than a week, like in a few days.
Technically, it's less than 48 hours, actually. Actually, less than 24, yeah. So the night before that, then Rashwin got a call that he threw to the whole team, said that, hey, we got a request. Then I said, hey, I saw this internet that, hey, you can make this yourself by 3D printer. Or we can do it in laser cutting way, which is much more faster. Since that we are maker space, we have laser cutter. So that's where things come from. And then we go back to the designer and say, that, hey, is it how to make it fit the thing? Is there a simple way for us to actually fit it down? Or then replaceable, reusable, stuff like that. And I think by Sunday night, we finally locked down the design. And then we talked to Taylor's side. They actually said, hey, Taylor, you guys have labs. Students in your school is not... lab is not open yet. Is it able you borrow some of your lab equipment to us so we can run this thing? Yeah, pretty much they okay with it. And by Monday, we all get the police letters, everything. We went all to the place and we start making it right now. And then we deliver that.
You mentioned laser cutting, and so this is something that you're working on with others in the 3D printing community as well, like 3D Printing Malaysia and MRO.
Yeah.
But you specifically, you're using laser cut as your method, you know, in your version as your method. So what is the difference? Like, what's the advantage of laser cutting?
So the idea of 3D printing is, of course, everything starts from 3D printings. It's easy to make. So you can buy a 3D printer right now from locals, e-commerce website for around 700 ringgit. So you can build it and you can start printing at home. The only problem is it takes hours, 2 to 3 hours, 1 to 2 hours at that, at least to print one. And imagine you're gonna pick 100 of them. But by laser, I can cut one in like 2 minutes. So that's easier, faster, and much more consistent, where we can then actually make it into something much more long lasting. But 3D printer, the good thing about 3D printer is everyone can have it. So not just KL side will have a supply. We can actually mobilize people from all over the whole Malaysia. Like the one we get Starbucks, Sarawak, and Saturday. We have the whole 3D computer community say, hey, you guys get 10 or 20 printer it, start making it. So right now, I think the whole community have been ganged up together and people come out with new design, their own design. So it's, we treat the 3D printing as something more decentralized. But by laser side, we just partner with all of our long industrial partner who have laser cutter. And then we ship them the material that they help cut this. Then we ship back to us, then we assemble it, and then we send it to hospital.
So it takes about 2 minutes to print one mask. So what's the timeline for the whole process like? Like how many are you able to manufacture in a day? How many are you able to send to them?
So original, we are doing like almost 300 to 300 masks per day. It's now ramped out to around 600 to 700. We are targeted to hit 1,000. Then Mereka actually run a donation drive to actually hit the target of 18,000 masks by end of this thing. We don't intend to get this as a solution for the hospital staff to actually use, but more like a stopgap measure. Since that the staff, they are running out and their stock haven't come yet. So by this time, we hope that what we can provide to them is some protection is better than no protections. Yeah, so that's what we provide to them. And right now, all the doctors and everything, they are finally much more, the frontliners are much more relaxed now because at least they know that they have something on their head. So what happened is this face shield itself, they are mainly used on the frontliner, especially if you are actually go over to the screening center. So what happened is they actually have one strap that actually go into your throat. And most of the time, the patient will cough. So if you just wear a normal face mask, you basically expose your eyes, your face, front of face, everything. So it's best that you have another protection. So they wear that thing whole day long to screen stuff. So best of them is actually they change it every single patient, but they don't have that luxury now. So the process now is almost they change it every 20 or 30 stuff. So a day, they can easily use a few hundreds. But if you think about longer, a much more deeper thing that if the hospital has been classified as a COVID hospital, most of the staff inside that other ward, like for the radioactive ward, they are for emergency room, they also need some kind of protections. So if the hospital need at least, there's 2,000 staff, including cleaners, including a police mantle and everything. So that's a lot of face shield they're going to need. So what we're doing right now is basically, hey, give them some extra protections and something that we can make ourselves, and we try to make it to be reusable. So they can, those non-critical ones can then sterilize it and reuse the thing again.
So is there a number for the number of masks that are in shortage, like a number or like a target that you're trying to hit? Like, do you have info saying like, you know, we are short of 10,000 masks and that's the gap that you're trying to fill?
So what happened is we do have, we do have numbers from Sungai Buloh Hospital. They claim that they use 40,000 face shields a month. So I don't think that's a very, that shouldn't be the number we need to hit. So we calculate the needs at around these few weeks. We come out numbers at 18,000 masks. That's where I set our target is. And that's where we aim to hit in the first place. So we aim to produce at least that amount of masks or reusable masks that can fill that purpose and distribute to all the hospitals. So a lot of hospitals, they actually submitted their request because we have a request form on the website, say that, hey, this is what you need. This is what you can request. So some of them fear some much more larger number, like 10,000, 20,000. But we would then check with them them back, so that is it you need that many? And since our mask can be reused, can you maybe like only supply the more critical one with a one-time use one, whereby the other ward people use our reusable mask? So this is what we're trying to fill with them. So, but right now, if you ask the exact number, in our website now, we are aiming for 18,000 masks to be delivered to the thing. That's our donations targets, and that's what we use.
You mentioned donations, and I'm assuming that's how all of this works. Like, that's what fuels the initiative. So who are the donors? Like, is it something that you, did you reach out to the public for that?
So what happened is Mereka main company's BGG initiative is a social enterprise. So our account is audited and can get tax exemption as well. So all this, we actually set up a fund for this to actually get people to donate into that fund. And then we actually list out that what we are to spend on it, how much material they actually buy on it. So most of the donation drive, the money is actually used for buying raw material itself. So especially in this lockdown period, it's actually very, very hard to actually get raw material because all the stock, all the factory closing, everything. So we had to source it from a lot of places. And some of the stuff, that bigger stuff that we cannot build ourselves, we actually help get our partner to build it. And they actually charge us a much more lower price, but still we pay some price for it. And for the delivery, we're happy to have our partner Sumakita, which is another logistics collective, to actually help us source out, like, for example, how to deliver the item to the hospital in safe, so that we don't need to go approach the hospital and expose ourselves in danger.
I wanted to ask about the people who are helping you do this. You know, who are they? Like, how do you get people or volunteers to help you with making the masks, you know, to join the effort?
So right now, we are mostly run on our staff. Because currently, we're MCO. So both our makerspace are closed. So we actually call back some of our staff who actually live nearby and are willing to help. But we are trying to keep our staff in a very small amount for the MCO and reduce our risk. So for example, in Taylor's side, we set a rule that we only maximum have 5 people. So some of them, we actually have volunteers who actually come over, supply us materials, and they actually come down together with us. We're wearing masks and we try to make some masks thing. But right now, since at productions, we have been shipping out. So in Taylor's side, we're actually just cutting and getting the material in and then produce the material, whereby the packaging, the assembly line itself happened in Pabrika side. Yeah. So that is a much more, they have more staff there, but they are all have bigger place to actually quarantine. I mean, less people in the room. So the idea is, I think they have minimum 1 or 2 people in the room only, not more than 3 people in the room.
Right, we've got Jin on the line from Mareka Makerspace, and we're talking about how Makerspace is using 3D printing to make face masks and protective gear to help medical professionals who may be facing a shortage of gear as the infection spreads. We'll be back in a bit. BFM 89.9.
Busy following money trail. BFM 89.9.
Powering through the pandemic on BFM 89.9. I'm Arvind Yuvraj, and our guest today is MakerLab coordinator Shirza Jin. We're talking about how they're using 3D printing to make face masks that could be used by medical personnel. Jin, you know, like, since the masks are being used in the medical space, are there like guidelines for the masks? Like, do you have to follow like a specific criteria or get approvals for the designs? Like, how does that work?
Right now, like I said, these are things that we actually talk to mostly. So the problem is KKM only acknowledge manufacturers who are larger manufacturers. So they don't acknowledge individual manufacturers. So in terms of KKM cert, I don't think that we actually fit the criteria. But however, that all of our design actually go through to a few doctors to actually verify, say that, hey, is this something make for use or not? So one of the things that we discovered, that a lot of the DIY mask, you know, the one they make with the form and just a pure mask transparent sheet. So they have main problem because the form itself can't be too thick. And if you have a doctor in the operation theater, they are wearing goggles, they're wearing an identifying mask. And then with the face shield itself, the face shield just basically glue onto your face. So when you breathe, the warp just go onto it and you can't actually see very well because it's too close to the face. So we designed a way that our mask is actually somewhere much more further out, so it maintains a distance. And secondly, we make a mask, our current design is actually bigger, with A3 size, so it actually cover more areas. And last but not least, also, we actually try to make sure the top part is fully covered. So the saliva, everything, the droplet won't come from the top into your eyes instead. So we go through this together with a few doctors and their feedback. Like, for example, they prefer rubber bands because they're easier to take off, and some of them is actually wearing headband and things, so they will tie their hair. So a few things that we understand from the doctor's side. And right now, what we're trying to do is actually make something bigger and suitable for their use.
Okay. If we were to put like a cost or like a price tag on the masks, like how would we do that? Because obviously these are, you know, donated and, you know, they're given out for free, of course, right, for the medical frontliners. But for calculation's sake, just to know the worth of the value per mask, how much would a mask cost?
Right now, because I kind of thought about, let's say from starting from 3D printer side one, or DIY side one, just a foam and a plastic sheet. So that one costs around $1, $1 plus like that. And the 3D printer one is slightly more expensive. We're looking at about $3 to $4. And same as well for Malaysia one, is around, for our acrylic one, is around the same, to $3 to $4 as well. So we're looking to cut the price down even further by mass producing it. But right now, with our raw material costs coming in and the laser cutting price coming in, that's around the price. But the commercial one, the one they're buying right now, it used to be selling around 20 ringgit, but right now it's around 50 and you can't get a stock.
Yeah, because it's jacked up.
Yeah, correct.
Yeah, yeah. Jin, what kinds of challenges are you facing at the moment with the initiative?
I think the hardest part is actually to get into the right doctors, the right ward. Because hospital itself, they have a lot of departments. So sometimes if you send a mask to this department, but maybe they only use it for their department, they don't actually distribute to the whole hospital. Hospital, by what we see, is actually not just a hospital by itself. So it's sometimes we have a lot of requests coming from the same hospital, but they are from different ward. So for us, how to identify that, how to identify the request and get them to the right thing is a bit challenging for us. Because some of the time, they are most of it in operations or they in doing their job, they might not be able to answer the call. And we do not want our driver or delivery to actually expose themselves by going into the quarantine zone. So yeah, we need to have a better solution on that side. And moreover, with the heightened MCO right now, we no more than 10 kilometers, that also eliminated a lot of people to actually get volunteers. So we actually trying the other way by decentralizing right now, whereby we actually make the mass production site, and then we get the assembly parts to each volunteer house and let them household the assembly, and then we collect it back. So then that's why we had to set a new SOP on how to sterilize the mask, how to make sure that it's actually clean and sterilized before we get to the medical person.
So this sounds more like a open source kind of concept. Anyone who knows how to read the guidelines or the blueprint could be, you know, should be able to contribute or make these masks. So are you reaching out to more people to do this on their own terms? Like are you sort of like sharing the blueprint so more people can get in on this?
Yeah, technically, yes. That's what we're actually doing. So we actually share our design and assembly guide on Instructable. In fact, you can get all the design everything for our website, america.my. You can see all the design there. You can just do whatever it is. Everything is open source. We share our source code, our design, everything, and feel free to actually go ahead and try it. And in fact, I think there's quite a number of other places. Like I know Para is doing it. Penang side is doing it as well. So they are using some of our designs. They also have their own design, everything. But the idea is the same. The tagline is actually Kita Jaga Kita. We help our own communities so that we don't need to like spend our logistic power to send something from KL to Penang or Kelantan. So everyone from their own community supporting their own community hospital. So this is what we strive for. And so far, it's happy to see this. Everything turned out very well in the 1 week. Everyone started to mobilize when the news come out, when people come out and they see people actually making it and they actually deliver to hospitals. So at least let the frontliner know that their works have been, people are supporting them. Yeah.
You know, outside the MCO and outside this pandemic, on any other given day, on a normal day, what is Mereka Makerspace like, just for context?
So the Taylor Mereka Makerspace is actually a facility set up by Taylor itself and then managed by Mereka. We aim to actually give Taylor students and the public to have space to experiment. We have all the equipments. They can come in to learn about new skills. To learn about, like, for example, if you wish to learn about laser cutting, wish about other design stuff, we have all the equipment, everything there for your experiments. And the best thing about it is that students can actually now come over here, so that they have any ideas, any cool projects, they want to build some cool stuff. Now they have a place to actually realize it together with us guiding them, and with the facility and equipment they can actually build upon. Yeah, so right now we do have laser cutters, weldings, woodworking tools, electronic lab, everything is there.
Jin, I think a good way to cap this interview would be to talk about what's going to happen next. Like, what do you foresee, you know, being in this initiative? Like, will there be an increase in production? Or what's the plan for the next few weeks?
So, if you ask my personal opinion, so I do think that because we do create awareness, so I think part of the stopgap measure is actually the objective is reached. Because I think some of the stocks start to come around the shore. I mean, we see China supply coming in slowly. So I think we should now focus on what coming next. So for my point of view side is, if the lockdown is prolonged, if the factories or office have to open back but within the lockdown periods, how do we able to check this thing? How are we able to make sure that people are continue to be monitored on the temperatures? How are they make sure they sterilize the whole environments? So these are things that actually we're focusing on right now. We're actually working with UM side to actually develop the DIY temperature trackers and a few other initiatives, like for example, for helping the medical side to do treatment their household critical condition patients. So these are the things that we're doing right now. So we are moving, once we finish up the face mask that we actually pledge to actually make, then we focus more our effort on energies on what comes next 2 weeks after. How do we get enterprise, how do we get school, everything, go back to on track? And how do we help doctors, everything, to make some of the tools that doesn't require a very proper medical certifications to help them to reduce that infections and help them in their work.
Jin, thanks so much for doing this and stay safe.
Thanks. You too.
Right. That was Maker Lab coordinator Shirza Jin talking about using 3D printing to make protective gear or PPE as the world faces a shortage of medical protective gear in the face of the COVID-19 pandemic. This interview is also available via podcast on the BFM website, which is bfm.my, or you can get it on the BFM app, which you can get for free on the Apple App Store on Google Play. Alternatively, we are also on Spotify. You can find us under the podcast section. This has been Arvind Yuvraj on Powering Through the Pandemic, BFM 89.9.
Powering through the pandemic on BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.